Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 178. I'm recording it on Saturday, October 10, 2009. The PE 10 level today is 19. That's better than what we saw at any time from 1996 through 2008, but it's not too exciting. The long-term value proposition of stocks is less than exciting today. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod at Incompetech.com. The title of the selection is Monster Promenade. The title of the podcast is Indexing Changes Everything. Two podcasts back, this is number 178. Number 176 was a thrilling podcast. It was titled Volatility is Optional. And I had been wanting to record a podcast giving credit to the pioneers, the people who developed the passive investing concept that I often criticize, because the rational investing concept is built on the passive investing concept. And while I think it's right to criticize people who got things wrong and have caused great human misery as a result, I also think it's right to give them credit for the good they have done and to point out that we wouldn't be able to develop the insights explored at this site without the work that these people had done before us. And obviously, pioneers do make mistakes. That's the way it happens. And if no one ever dared to be a pioneer, human understanding of life events would never increase. So we have a debt of gratitude to these people. And I wanted to make that point. And I decided the morning of that podcast, I got excited about a new insight, which I think is the most important breakthrough insight of the 7 years of discussions. And that caused me to say, okay, this is the day I have to record this one. I moved it to the top of the list, but I was so excited about the insight that prompted me to do the podcast that almost the entire podcast was ended up being about that insight, that volatility is optional. Which means that risk is optional. That stock risk, we have it in our power today, I believe. It's a tentative finding. But I believe we have it in our power today to eliminate stock risk virtually. That's just mind-blowing. I can't let it in. And I think a lot of people listening can't let it in. It's just too good. It's too good. Too good to be true. But yet, that's where the logic leads us. So until we hear a good argument showing otherwise, I'm going to lean towards believing it's true, and we'll see. Hopefully smart people will comment and we'll either gain confidence in the idea over time or lose confidence in the idea over time. But tentatively today, I put forward the idea that volatility is optional, risk is optional. It is within our grasp today to eliminate, to virtually eliminate stock risk. What a wonderful, wonderful investo world that will be if we take that step. But I want to return. I don't feel that I did a good job on the theme that I had intended to explore in that podcast, giving credit to the pioneers who led us this way. And so I want to return to that. And I am going to discuss that breakthrough insight just a little bit more, but mostly I want to discuss how that insight is the product of what came before us. The first stab, the way I think of it is, passive investing was the first stab at developing a rational approach to understanding stock investing. It was a first draft. The first draft was flawed, needs to be replaced. Rational investing is the second draft. I hope there won't be a third draft, but who knows? There may be a third draft. I hope that we're going to get it right this time, but we're humans. We're flawed. Maybe not. We'll see. I'm going to start by reading some words by William Bernstein, author of the book The Four Pillars of Investing, a prominent advocate of passive investing. I think it would be fair to say. And these words, you know, you can go to William Bernstein. I often make this point. I say, you know, there are things William Bernstein, when he advocates passive investing, you know, obviously not in his camp. However, the chapter two of William Bernstein's book is I think, possibly the most important chapter of any investing book ever written to this day. So in that sense, I'm a huge William Bernstein fan. Certainly, I've learned much from him. And this chapter, this paragraph that I'm going to read, it's actually, I guess, two paragraphs, has always stuck in my mind as being of immense importance. And as I look at this new super breakthrough insight, breakthrough is not enough, it's super breakthrough, I feel that I have to credit these two paragraphs, because without these two paragraphs, I wouldn't be saying the words that I said in that earlier podcast, volatility is optional. So I'm going to read this to you. The primary job, this is William Bernstein, the primary job of the security analyst is to predict the dividend flow of a company so that it may be discounted to obtain the fair value of its stock. If the market price is below the calculated fair value, it is bought. That makes sense, doesn't it? Bernstein says, if the market price of the stock is below the calculated fair value, it is bought. In other words, you're getting a deal. If the market price is above the calculated fair value, it is sold. Also makes sense. This is getting more important. This is no easy task. He's telling us what you need to do to be a rational investor. You need to determine whether the value of the stock you are buying is greater than the price being asked or less than the price being asked. And if the value is greater than the price being asked, you want to buy that stock. And if the value is less than the price being asked, you want to sell that stock. Nothing could be more simple. Nothing could be more obvious. Nothing could be more important. But, this is no easy task. This is the dilemma. William Bernstein, in this paragraph, this is page 48 of my edition, he's pointing to, I think, what can fairly be called the central problem of stock investing, going back to the first market that was ever formed. I have to read it again. I feel sometimes the things I say people don't hear. They're so basic that they just go through people. And it's this basic stuff that we got wrong. It's this basic stuff that is so important. The primary job of the security analyst is to predict the dividend flow of a company so that it may be discounted to obtain the fair value of its stock. If the market price is below the calculated fair value, it is bought. If the market price is above the calculated fair value, it is sold. This is no easy task. In fact, as we'll find out in chapter 4, it is an impossible task. It's in italics, the word impossible. It is an impossible task. So Bernstein has told us what stock analysis is all about. He's put his finger on it. It's not complicated. It's simple. It's just, it's what anything you buy in life is about. If you buy a big screen television, the question you need to ask yourself is, what is the value of this big screen television? What is the price? Is the value greater than the price, or is the value less than the price? If the value is greater than the price, make this transaction. If the value is less than the price, walk out the door. If you buy a car, it's the same thing. If you buy a banana, it's the same thing. If you buy a comic book, it's the same thing. And that's how stock investing works. 90% of what you hear about stock investing really doesn't matter that much, because if you get this one right, you don't need to hear the other 90%. And if you get this one wrong, the other 90% is not going to help you. This is what makes it work or not work. So he's identified, he's put his finger on what we need to know. But he threw us a bit of a curveball. This is no easy task. In fact, it is an impossible task. Well, we're in a jam, aren't we? The thing we need to know to invest effectively for the long run is an impossible task, says William Bernstein. And I think he's largely correct. I'm reading Bernstein again. Not infrequently, promising companies with large expected future dividend streams stumble and fall. So you could identify this wonderful company and you say, yeah, this is a great deal. The dividend stream is wonderful. But not infrequently, such a company will stumble and fall. Nearly as often, companies given up for dead recover and provide shareholders with prodigious amounts of future income. So he's identifying the key issue, and then he's throwing his hands up in the air and saying, we can't do it. All right? That's the backdrop. That's investing pre-indexing. The title of this podcast is Indexing Changes Everything. I've just described in that paragraph the investing project pre-indexing. We all knew what the project was about. Those of us, who gave it a little thought. But 90% of what we discuss doesn't relate to that, because it is either a difficult task or an impossible task, depending on how strongly you believe it. All right, the second paragraph I want to read. On the other hand, when you examine an entire market consisting of hundreds or thousands of companies, these unexpected events average out. For this reason, the income stream of the market as a whole is a much more reliable calculation. I'm going to read that one again. On the other hand, when you examine an entire market, if I could be sure that you wouldn't leave me, I would just read it 20 times and let the podcast end, because I'm telling you the secret of stock investing in the year 2009 by reading these words. I'm just going to be interpreting them. On the other hand, when you examine an entire market consisting of hundreds of thousands of companies, these unexpected events average out. For this reason, the income stream of the market as a whole is a much more reliable calculation. This is podcast number 178. I've got probably 100 articles on investing at the site. I've got blog posts, all kinds of things, calculators. But none of this stuff would exist. None of the material would exist at PassionSaving.com if it weren't for those two paragraphs and what they tell us. Those two paragraphs are the key. They open. Think of yourself in one of these adventure movies, where you're trying to get into the dragon's lair and steal the gold, and you can't get in. And you find the key, or you find the incantation that, if you say it, it opens the door. Well, we just found the incantation. Bernstein pointed to the problem we have to solve. We have to find out, are stocks a good buy or a bad buy? If we don't do that, we're basically goofing around. And frankly, that's what most people who invest in stocks today are doing. They're goofing around. They're spending a lot of time coming up with complex jizz-jazz to fill up pages in magazines and books that don't really help people invest effectively. It's gamesmanship. It's fooling around. Why are they fooling around? Because they're dumb? No, that's not it. Because they're bad people? No, that's not it. Because they don't know what the real questions are? No, that's not it. Because they know what the real questions are, and they've concluded, as Bernstein has in that first paragraph, that the problem can't be solved. The problem is you have to know it's called intrinsic value. You have to know the intrinsic value of something you buy in order to make an intelligent buying decision. Then once you know the intrinsic value, then you know, should I spend X on it or should I not? And you can't make a bad decision. There will be times when you know the intrinsic value and it'll turn out to be a bad decision. For example, the case I always think of is you could go to you could get a good deal on a car, you make a great deal, and the car breaks down. But you had no reason for knowing it would break down. The transaction ended up being a bad one, but you did your part. You bargained, you researched, you bought from a reputable dealer, but it just happened that you got a lemon, it was a quirk. So that can happen, and that can happen no matter how intelligent you are as an investor, that can happen. But the goal of the thing isn't to get a guarantee you're always going to win. The goal is to invest intelligently. And Bernstein just put his finger on what you have to do. You have to assess intrinsic value. And 90% of what you read in the magazines and the newspapers are not aimed at telling you intrinsic value. And the reason is because through the history of investing, either it couldn't be done. Bernstein says it cannot be done. I think that's an overstatement. I think Warren Buffett can tell you how it can be done, but it takes a lot of work. Not everybody is Warren Buffett. You're going to have to give up a lot of weekends if you want to be up there in the Warren Buffett class. I think it can be done, but it's a lot of work. And most of us either aren't interested or don't have the ability. So in practical terms, Bernstein is right. It can't be done in practical terms. So the reason they don't talk about this is, in practical terms, it can't be done. So how does that help us, Rob? You told us what matters. You got our hearts all a-fluttering, and then you told us it can't be done. Well, thanks a lot. You've got to read the second paragraph. On the other hand, when you examine an entire market consisting of hundreds or thousands of companies, these unexpected events average out. For this reason, the income stream of the market as a whole is a much more reliable calculation. I hope the way I'm saying it gets across the point that this is important. I'll go to the end of chapter 2 and read a brief section, and then I'll drop the quoting of Bernstein. The ability, he returns to this theme, and he says, the ability to estimate future stock and bond returns is perhaps the most critical of investment skills. In this chapter, we've reviewed a theoretical model that allows us to compute the expected returns of the major asset classes on an objective mathematical basis. And he says in the summary of the chapter, he lists, different bullet points. The ability to estimate the long-term future returns of the major asset classes is perhaps the most important investment skill that an individual can possess. That's what it's all about. This is what matters. You've got to know the intrinsic value. If you know the intrinsic value of stocks before you buy them, you're going to end up doing just fine in the long run. If you don't, the odds are against you. And all the jizz jazz talked about in the literature, and most of it doesn't matter. And the reason people waste their time talking about things that don't matter is because they've come to the conclusion that the thing that does matter can't be done practically. But if you listen closely to what I read, Bernstein's not saying it can't be done. He came close. He said it's impossible. That's close to saying it can't be done, isn't it? But then he flipped. At first he said it's impossible, and then he flipped. And he said, I've lost the page, so I may not be able to go back. But at first he said it's impossible because he was talking about looking at individual stocks. And when you look at individual stocks, it's either impossible or, at the very least, difficult. It's difficult to do. But when you look at a broad stock index, what was impossible looking at individual stocks is no longer impossible. It becomes doable. It becomes doable. And he says at the end, we now have developed an approach to determining the fair value, the intrinsic value of the stocks we buy. And the key to it is what? The key to it is what? You can't be buying an individual company. You need to buy what? He says a broad collection of stocks. Well, what is a broad? How do we go about buying a broad collection of stocks? We don't buy ABC company. We buy what? We buy an index. Here's what he says on that. I found the page. On the other hand, when you examine an entire market consisting of hundreds of thousands of companies, these unexpected events average out. You see, you can study, companies, the balance sheets to your eyes bleed, and you've still got a lot of, I think you can make a lot of money that way. I think if you study Warren Buffett's value investing, you can make a lot of money. But even Warren Buffett will admit he makes mistakes. There are companies he picks that he thinks are, good odd bets, and they bomb. And that's the biggest risk of stock investing. Indexing changes everything. I don't think Bernstein appreciates the power of his words. If he appreciated what he said in those two paragraphs, he wouldn't have written the four pillars of investing. He would have written why indexing changed the world. Indexing is the fountain of youth. Indexing is the perpetual motion machine. Indexing is the holy grail. The problem that people have been trying to solve with investing for decades, centuries, was solved. I mean, there'll be new problems, I'm sure. But the biggest problem we faced in investing for many, many, many years was solved with the development of the indexing concept. Why? Because when you examine an entire market consisting of hundreds or thousands of companies, these unexpected events average out. We no longer have to worry about management of a company, going bad, or the moat, being removed, or the industry being outdated or whatever. It just doesn't matter because you can buy an index. And what's the next sentence? For this reason, the income stream of the market as a whole is a much more reliable calculation. If you can calculate the income stream coming in from your investment, you can't go wrong. You just calculate the income stream. And you either decide it's worth paying for, it's not. What we have today, we don't know it. Not many of us know it. I think I know it. I talk about it every day. I write about it every day. I think I know it. We have this huge power in our hands, and we just don't understand that we have it. We don't understand. We've solved the investing puzzle, but we can't admit it to ourselves. It's like too good. I mentioned the other day the Paul Simon song, Something So Right. This is just, this thing is sitting here. It's been sitting here for 30 years, and we're afraid to pick it up because it's such a beautiful thing that we're afraid if we pick it up, we're going to break it or something. And, you know, we don't want to get our hopes up. You know, it's like, it's like you find out, you know, your child is waiting for daddy to come home from the war, and you get a letter saying he's coming home on Saturday, and you're afraid to tell the child because what if he doesn't? What if the plane, you know, crashes into the ocean or something? You're afraid to get his hopes up. We have solved the investing puzzle, but we're afraid to let it in. And I am saying, why don't we just let it in? Now, people, I discuss these ideas, valuation-informed indexing as a strategy and rational investing as a model for understanding how stock investing works. I discuss these ideas on blogs, discussion boards, almost on a daily basis. And something I get all the time, you know, passive investing is the enemy. Passive investing is the way of thinking about investing that keeps this breakthrough insight out of our reach. As long as you believe in passive investing, you can never do what Bernstein is saying you should do here. Bernstein is saying you should calculate the income stream of the market, And up above, he said what to do about it. When the income stream is sufficient to make stocks a good bet, you buy. And when the income stream is not sufficient, you don't buy. Well, you can't do that if you're a passive investor. Because if you're a passive investor, you buy all the time. There's no such thing as looking at the intrinsic value for a passive investor. It's a passive investor, you just do the same thing all the time. So you don't look at price. You don't look at value. It's forbidden. But if we give up passive investing, this door opens to us. It's the only thing. Now, I'll go on all the times. I'll go on, as I say, and I'll say, you know, passive investing is this, passive investing is that. And I get all kinds of responses. But one that I get commonly is, it's not the fault of the passive investors. It's only a tiny percentage of the population that buys index funds. 90% are active investors. Well, in other words, people confuse passive investing with indexing. And I am saying passive investing is the enemy. Passive investing is evil. And they're saying, oh, you don't like indexing. Indexing's fine. I love indexing. There's nothing wrong with indexing. So you have to distinguish these concepts. Indexing is the thing they got right. It's the thing the experts got right. Passive investing is the thing that has ruined indexing. Passive investing is the thing that has turned indexing, the most wonderful strategy that's come down the pike, into the worst strategy that's come down the pike. Passive investing turns it bad, turns it sour. What is indexing? Indexing is huge diversification at low cost. That's why you don't have to worry about whether the individual companies do good or do bad. Because it all averages out when you buy an index. So the thing, but see, that people just, I mean, all these people promote indexing, but they don't get what the power of indexing is. The power of indexing is it lets you do what Bernstein's talking about. It lets you make your investing, it lets you set your allocation according to the intrinsic value of stocks. Something that we've always wanted to do, but couldn't do. Or at least in practical terms, most of us couldn't do it. Warren Buffett tries to do it and does it successfully. But most of us practically can't do it. But with indexing, everybody can do it. Everybody can be Warren Buffett, really. That's what it comes to. Everybody can be Warren Buffett. Can't get the returns that Warren Buffett did. That's not available to us. But attractive returns are available to us. And no work, no extra work required, no research, just a little bit common sense understanding and a willingness not to invest passively, a willingness to throw passive investing on the trash heap of history. That's been the sticking point. Because passive takes 90% of the power of indexing and depletes it. It leaves you with a little crumbs. But it takes away the most powerful thing indexing lets you do. Indexing lets you determine the intrinsic value of your stock purchase, and time the market, which means to buy stocks when they offer a strong intrinsic value, and to avoid buying stocks, to refrain from buying stocks when they offer a poor intrinsic value. To buy stocks at the right time. To buy stocks at the right price. That's what indexing lets you do. And we see, what's going on is, there's this, it's sort of like we're all under a spell. And I think the biggest problem people have hearing my stuff, I have so many people say to me, yeah, Rob, that makes sense, but it can't be right. If it were right, all these smart people would be saying it, and they're not saying it. You know, yeah, it makes sense. Well, that's good to make sense, but that's not enough. It can't be right. The reason why all these people aren't advocating it is, there's a number of reasons, but the primary reason is they just can't let it in to their consciousness. We've gone, you know, as I say, decades, maybe centuries, not being able to solve this puzzle, and now we figured it out, and we just can't believe it. But if we could just stop all the defensiveness, and just think about what we have in our hands, we change the history of investing, really, overnight. That's the power. And it couldn't have been done without indexing. A point that I make often when I'm advocating valuation-informed indexing, people will say, well, Rob, the experts don't. Well, there is no bigger expert than Benjamin Graham. Benjamin Graham was the author of the book Security Analysis, which is the Bible of stock investing analysis, published in the 1930s. Benjamin Graham is Warren Buffett's mentor. He's the guy Warren Buffett went to learn how to invest in stocks. Guess what Benjamin Graham advocated? Valuation-informed indexing. So the greatest expert of all time endorses the strategy I talk about at this website. There is no bigger expert. Now, I say Benjamin Graham advocated valuation-informed indexing. Is that technically true? Well, in a technical sense, it's not, because there was no such thing as indexing when Benjamin Graham was on the scene. But Benjamin Graham recommended, you can find it in his book, he recommended going with a 75% stock allocation when prices are low. He recommended going with a 50% stock allocation when prices are moderate. And he recommended going with a 25% stock allocation when prices are high. What does that sound like to you? That's valuation-informed indexing. Changing your allocation in response to price. And no, he didn't say that that would work within 6 months or a year. He talked about the long-term benefits. Guess who came up with PE10? Benjamin Graham. 1930s. It's just been sitting there. But Benjamin Graham understood what we needed. The trouble was, there were no index funds. So you could use this strategy, but not nearly as effectively as you can use it today, because there were no index funds. You could try to create your own index. You know, you could buy a diversified group of stocks, something like that. There were things you could do. But there were no index funds. Now you have index funds, which index funds were made for this strategy, made for Benjamin Graham. And the whole thing got thrown off track because of one dumb mistake. One dumb mistake. All of this came from academics, all the passive investing stuff, the good and the bad. And the academics had a puzzle. They said the market prices in the short term are not predictable. No one ever said they were not predictable in the long term. There's never been such a finding. Never. They were not predictable in the short term, and they had to try to explain that, and they came up with this goofy explanation that the market is efficient because it was the best they could come up with, and it's totally wrong. It if you follow it, you end up thinking the opposite of everything that's true about investing. But the theory was so goofy and so wrong that they're now embarrassed to admit the mistake. I mean, they don't admit it to themselves. They can't. They just can't stand to admit it. It was so dumb, so profoundly dumb. And even the explanation they came up with, the efficient market, doesn't say a darn thing about long-term predictability of stock prices. This is why somebody like Bernstein, who advocates passive investing, can point out in his book that it is possible to predict long-term stock prices. And of course, it always was. And there never was any reason to think it wasn't. Never. People ask me, they'll say, people who are supportive of me, and they'll say, Rob, you've got to get a peer-reviewed study, or nobody's going to believe you can time the market without a peer-reviewed study. Well, first of all, there are peer-reviewed studies. There have been peer-reviewed studies going back to 1981. People just don't believe them. And second of all, you don't need a peer-reviewed study showing you can time the market. The fact that you can time the market in the long term is common sense. All that it means is that price affects the long-term value proposition. How could it not? What kind of study do you need to show that? And there's never been a study the other way. It's not as if we're trying to refute something. There's never been any reason to believe you couldn't do it. None. Zero. Zilch. Nada. When they say timing doesn't work, what they're talking about is short-term timing doesn't work. There's lots of studies showing that, never one showing that long-term doesn't work. So you can time the market in the long term. You can know your future stock return if you care to. And I think we should start taking advantage of this gold. We should pick it up and use it. Now, we're only really, it's hard. Human beings learn. I talk all the time about how human beings learn. We don't learn by reading things in books. I mean, it helps us. It's a good thing. But that's not really how we learn. We don't learn by doing studies. That's also a good thing. But the primary way that humans learn is by talking things over amongst ourselves. And this gold has been available to us since 1981 when Robert Shiller, Yale professor, did research showing that long-term timing always works. Which means you can buy stocks knowing how they're going to do in advance if you're willing to buy index funds. Which means stocks aren't risky anymore. You can either greatly diminish the risk of stocks, or if you care to, I believe you can totally eliminate it. Not individually. We'd have to do that collectively. I'll go through in a second the steps. I believe we can eliminate the risk of stock investing virtually. We can virtually eliminate the risk of stock investing. Can you imagine? Can you imagine having your children grow up in a world where stock investing is not risky? Not significantly more risky than investing in a certificate of deposit. Can you imagine what that means for the growth of our economy and for our odds of funding successful retirements and early retirements and building businesses, capitalizing new endeavors? Can you? It's mind-blowing. Listen to the earlier podcast if you want more in depth of what that's all about. Volatility is optional. It was two back. But I believe tentatively today that that can be done. That's not a hard finding. That's a tentative finding. But I believe that. I want to discuss it with other people before I get too strong on it. I'll go through the stages of risk. Four levels of risk. One, there's the risk you have if you buy individual stocks. And of course, that's what Bernstein was talking about. That's risky stuff. Now, it's high profit stuff. If you do what Warren Buffett does, you can make a lot of money. Warren Buffett makes, I don't know what his, I don't want to say. His returns are huge. 15% real per year or something. I don't know. You get rich real fast that way. Real fast. But risky. Many people have tried. Many people have failed. If you think you're as smart as Warren Buffett, give it a shot. You only live once. But don't say that I told you you were right, because I think there's risk there. Significant risk. It's a lot of risk. I don't do it. I don't do it. That's stage one. That's why stocks are thought of as risky. Because for years and years and years, that's what stock investing meant. Before indexing, that's what it meant. It meant everybody who invested in stocks had to be a little Warren Buffett. There were no alternatives. And we've only had indexing for what? Bogle founded Vanguard, I don't know, 76, something like that. So we've had indexing for 30 years. And it hasn't clicked with people yet. The reason I'm able to do what I do, to put forward these shocking claims about how to invest effectively, that not, you know, very few of the experts are telling you about, is it's been sitting there and nobody picks up the ball. And I got tired of it and started picking it up myself. As unqualified as I am, I never went to investing school. I never managed a fund. But somebody's got to do it. You know, maybe if I pick up the ball, you know, John Bogle would get in the effort, and Bill Bernstein and Scott Burns and Jonathan Clements and all the rest. Somebody shows them how to do it. I mean no personal offense, but I shouldn't be doing this work. It's not right. But somebody's got to do it. So until 76 or whatever year it was when Vanguard was founded, stock investing was a high-risk endeavor. That's why people think it's a high-risk endeavor today, but it doesn't have to be, so says Rob Bennett. That's level one. Level two, what Bogle did in 76 or whatever year it was he started promoting the indexing concept. Now, I think, unfortunately, he combined it with the passive investing concept, a totally different thing. Indexing is broad diversification at low cost, all good, no bad. Passive investing is ignoring price when setting your stock allocation. All bad, no good. And people think of the two things as being the same, and there's just no... The only reason they think of them being the same is that the same person promoted both of them. Bogle promotes indexing, and Bogle promotes passive investing. That's it. I mean, but they're totally different things. Indexing is wonderful. Passive investing is a disease. But the same guy promoted them both. I think passive investing is made investing more passive indexing made investing more dangerous. The one good thing you could say about investing the Warren Buffett way, the pre-indexing way, picking stocks, is at least you had to do research before you put your money down. You know, nobody could say that was easy, so you knew you had to do research, and if you didn't, you were just a fool. What people do today is they listen to all these experts and they think, oh, I don't have to do research because I'm buying an index. But they also think the experts are right about the passive part, and they think it's safe to put their money down without looking at valuations. It's the most dangerous thing you can do, the most reckless thing you can do with your retirement money. So I think what Bogle did inadvertently, he obviously didn't intend this, he made investing twice as risky as it was pre-Bogle, but without meaning to. He gave us the key with indexing, but then he took it back by mistakenly including the passive thing in there. So that's level two. Level two is such a mess. If you invested at the top of the bubble passively, the way that I define risk, I think the cleanest way to define risk is how long does it take to get your money back, or how long does it take for you to get the return you could have gotten with a super safe asset class? And if you bought stocks at the top of the bubble, it can take 30 years. Look at the stock return predictor. Plug in a P10 value of 44 and you'll see. It can take 30 years for you to do better. In a worst case scenario, it can take 30 years and you won't have done quite as well as you would have with tips. I don't know the exact numbers. I may look them up since I'm saying it. But 30 years, and you won't necessarily make up what you could have done with a risk-free asset class, Treasury inflation-protected securities. I believe that's so. If the calculator comes up here, I'm going to plug it in and verify it. 44 P10 level. You can check it yourself with the calculator at the website. 30-year worst-case scenario, a return of 2.7 annualized, real. The return on tips at the top of the bubble was 4.0. So you could go 30 years with stocks and still be down on what you would have been with a risk-free asset class. That's risk. That's risk. In bucketfuls. So, yeah, the Warren Buffett type risk, which is serious risk for the middle class person. It's not if you're Warren Buffett, but for the middle class person, high risk. Not a great situation, but you know, not many middle class people bought stocks in those days, so it wasn't that big a deal. Then we had the Bogle Revolution. Indexing changed everything, and instead of decreasing risk, we increased it. But we sure had the potential to decrease it. We had this great power of being able, for the first time in history, to understand the intrinsic value of the stocks we bought. Okay, level three, that's valuation-informed indexing. That's what I discuss at this site, passionsaving.com. And it's what John Walter Russell discusses at early-retirement-planning-insights.com. What we discuss at a lot of the retire early and indexing discussion boards, or we have discussed over the past 7 years. With valuation-informed indexing, you reduce the risk of stocks dramatically. With valuation-informed indexing, you don't buy stocks when it's going to take 30 years, or when it may take 30 years to break even with tips. You buy stocks when they're selling at reasonable prices. And when they're selling at reasonable prices, I'll go to my trusty calculator. I'll plug in a PE10 level of 14, which is the fair value PE10 level, the fair value price level for stocks. And let's look at the worst case scenario. The worst case scenario in 10 years is a positive return of 0.3. Not great, but that's, I mean, it's not as good as you could do in tips today. But and we're not out of 14 today. Usually in tips, you could do 2. So in 10 years, you could be down in a worst-case scenario. But in a most likely scenario, you'd have a return of 6.3. And that would be, that's a lot better than what you can do in low-risk asset classes. So in roughly 10 years, the odds are strong that you're going to be happy you bought stocks. So instead of having a Warren Buffett situation where you simply cannot, for practical purposes, calculate the intrinsic value, and instead of having a Bogle-type situation where you might have to wait 30 years to be okay, in 10 years, the odds are strong you're going to be okay. So you've reduced risk dramatically. Dramatically. Well, that's good. But the thing that I talk about in that earlier podcast, volatility is optional, is level four. This is the ultimate. Level four is when not only do you practice valuation-informed indexing, we all go to our neighbors and our friends and our coworkers and our fellow community members, and we urge them to adopt rational investing practices. We urge the magazines to stop pushing this passive investing gibberish on us. We tell everybody, please take price into consideration. Please stop poisoning the environment. Because when our fellow community members, when our fellow investors fail to consider price, stock prices go bonkers and the whole market is corrupted. And when the market is corrupted, we see an economic crisis. And we lose jobs. And businesses fail. And marriages fail. And retirements fail. That's not a joke. When we have an economic crisis caused by passive investing, our political system may fail. That's what we're seeing today. It's not failing, but it's under stress. It's under stress. Because middle-class families are under stress financially. That's why. The primary reason why. There's more than one reason. But that's a big factor. That's what's causing so much of our problems today. And it's all optional, it's all unnecessary, it's all caused by reckless investing, it's all caused by thinking you cannot know the long-term value of stocks. And you can, as Bernstein explained in his book, if you index. So level four is not just you personally engaging in valuation-informed indexing. Level four is we make it a social project Just like we want to clean up the ocean and we want to clean up the air, we want to clean up the stock market. We want to get this passive gibberish out. We want people paying attention to price. We want people paying attention to value propositions. We want people paying attention to intrinsic value. We want people paying attention to the P10 level. And when that happens, what happens? Stock prices become self-regulating. If you use the stock return predictor, every time prices start to get too high, the value proposition drops, and that causes you to sell, and that pulls prices back down. And every time prices get too low, the value proposition goes up, and that causes you to buy, and that causes prices to come back up. When investors know how stock investing works, volatility disappears. Volatility disappears. And what happens if we don't have volatility in the stock market? If we don't have volatility, what's left is the economic volatility is emotion. That's all it is. When we take out volatility, what's left? The economic realities. And the economic realities are the U.S. economy has been sufficiently productive to finance a 6.5 real return on stocks for many, many years now. So every year you invest in stocks, you get 6.5 real, roughly. And you don't have to worry about all this crazy stuff like we had in the 90s with stocks going up 30% a year, or the crazy stuff we had in 2008 with stocks going down 50% a year. All that stuff is history. If we can share this understanding of how stock investing works with everyone else, with all our fellow investors. And it's indexing that makes this possible. So, is Rob Bennett an enemy of the is Rob Bennett an enemy of passive investing? Yes. Please quote me. Please describe me as the most vehement enemy of passive investing alive on planet Earth today. You'll make me happy. But please don't ever quote me as being an enemy of the people, the pioneers who have advocated in passive investing, because most of them are people who have advocated indexing, which is our salvation. What valuation-informed indexing does is it makes indexing workable. It takes a flawed idea developed by a genius, John Bogle, who happened to get something wrong because he's not only a genius, but he's human, a human genius, and it makes the idea work in the real world. So we respect the pioneers, but we don't unquestionably, follow everything they say. We show enough respect for them to question them when they get something wrong. Passive investing was the first draft. Rational investing is what they were driving at from the beginning. Both approaches are based on data. Both approaches are based on academic research. Both approaches involve coming up with a theoretical model of how markets work. Both approaches take a long-term focus. Both approaches are simple so that they can be used by the middle-class investor. Both approaches focus on reducing risk, seeking good enough returns rather than get-rich-quick stuff. Both approaches are community-centered rather than individual-centered. Both approaches have humility at the core, that we don't know everything, an acceptance that we don't know everything. Both approaches could be described as boring, not in that they're boring because you don't have all these shocks, but they're exciting because they give you financial freedom early in life. Both approaches build on the insights of lots of smart people. The smartest people in the investing field are the people who came up with passive investing. As dumb as that idea is, it's the smartest people out there who have been advocating it for years now. Passive investing was the first draft. Rational investing is the draft that works. The first draft that works. Not for short amounts of time, but in the long term. Which is, of course, the goal. The goal was to have something that would work for the long term. The reality that we're dealing with here is all human progress is made by people standing on the shoulders of those who came before them. Bogle was standing on the shoulders of people like Benjamin Graham. He saw things that people who came along before him didn't see. There were, you know, Bogle was mocked. Bogle was mocked in the early days. He had a lot of flack directed at him. Why? Because he was putting forward something new. And when you're putting forward something new, there are always people who are going to doubt that something new could work. And there are also always institutional interests that oppose something new. Because people have gotten jobs based on the old system, and people have built reputations based on the old system, and people have written books based on the old system, and they don't want to change. Bogle went up against all that. And he won. That's what we need to do today. We need some brave souls to pick up where Bogle left off, because Bogle couldn't see it all. Bogle was standing on the shoulders of those before him, and he could see but so far. But Bogle lifted us up higher on the mountain, and now we can see a lot farther. And now we can see not only that indexing is a good idea, that we can reduce the risk, that we can eliminate that risk of picking individual stocks, which Bogle, you know, appreciate it. We can do more than that. We can eliminate the risk of volatility, which Bogle didn't have a clue that we could do. I think he has a clue today, but he doesn't understand it. Well, I have an earlier podcast. John Bogle says that valuation-informed indexing can work. Bogle is starting to get it, that valuation-informed indexing can work, but he doesn't fully grasp it. He doesn't fully endorse it. It may not be Bogle's generation that ever comes to grasp it. But the generation that does come to grasp it will have Bogle to thank for getting us high enough up on the mountain so that we could see things that in Bogle's day just couldn't be seen. It's because we think the way Bogle taught us to think that today we're able to see these things that Bogle, when he developed his ideas, could not. Indexing, the wonderful thing about indexing from a theoretical standpoint is that it holds things stable that were not stable when you were trying to pick individual stocks. You see, when you're trying to solve puzzles, and this is what I've been doing on a daily basis for 7 years now, I'm faced with puzzles, and I have to try to solve them. You know, why is this? Why is the other thing? And what you have to do when solving a puzzle, there's often 10 moving pieces to the puzzle, and you can't solve it. It's impossible. Your brain can't comprehend what's going on. What you've got to try to do is hold 9 of the pieces steady, and then just look at the one, and then you get the pattern. You say, I see what's going on here. It's moving this way when such and such happens. Bogle held things steady in a big way by developing the indexing concept, because indexing holds all kinds of things steady. As Bernstein pointed out, you don't have to worry anymore about whether the companies, you know, have a good year, whether the product is successful, whether they get new management. None of that stuff matters because it all evens out when you're dealing with an index fund. So when in Bogle's day, when he was developing the indexing concept, he was thinking, he was thinking stocks are risky, right? They've always been risky. The idea that stock risk could be virtually eliminated was unbelievable to him. It never could have occurred to him. Unimaginable. But he held these things steady, and he opened the door to us analyzing things in ways we were never able to analyze them before. And by analyzing them step by step, we have been able to come to see that maybe stock volatility can be eliminated with index funds. Index funds combined with investor education on how valuations affect long-term returns can't be done under the passive model. But under the rational model, I think it's possible. I think it's possible. And if that's not possible, it certainly is possible for the individual investor to greatly diminish the risk of stock investing. I think it's possible to, I think it's possible to go even farther than that. The key here was holding things steady. Holding things steady and investing was a tough, complicated subject in the days before indexing. Holding things steady allowed us to examine risk in ways we were never able to do so before. It allowed us to study the effect of valuations in ways we were never able to do so before. It enabled us to study volatility in ways we were never able to do so before. That's what all the work we do at PassionSaving.com is about. The last point I wanted to make was just to make the parallel to safe withdrawal rates. Safe withdrawal rates is where I got started. I determined, my claim to fame is that I am the person who discovered the errors in the old school safe withdrawal rate studies, the studies that to this day financial planners use to tell us how to plan our retirements, retirement portfolios. And those studies get all the numbers wrong because they don't include an adjustment for valuations. And I reported, I discovered that only because I was putting together my own plan and I happened to read a book by guess who, John Bogle. And John Bogle explained to me that valuations affect long-term returns. And I said, wait a minute, these studies don't include an adjustment for that. They can't be right. And so I knew not to follow those studies. And I made a mental adjustment in my head for what the effect of valuations was because I'm not skilled enough with numbers to do a counter study. And then I went to a discussion board and said, hey, why don't we do a counter study? There's a lot of smart people here. Let's do a counter study. And some people jumped at that and did wonderful work that led to all the insights we've developed over the past 7 years. And other people freaked out, said, no, you know, we did studies under the old, we're not going to admit we were wrong. We made those same mistakes and we don't want to admit that. And that's the end of that. But the sad thing is, there are people who will say, you know, Rob doesn't like safe withdrawal rate studies. And there are people today who have come to agree that the safe withdrawal rate studies aren't too good. But their conclusion is, okay, safe withdrawal rate analysis doesn't work. That's not. You know, there's a blog I was posting out on Friday, the Behavior Gap blog. It's a very good blog. But the guy is going through a series about financial planning. And he says, financial planning doesn't work. And he gave an example, the safe withdrawal rate area. And this is common today. The idea is, well, is the safe withdrawal rate analysis has failed us. Numbers are all wrong. Millions of people are going to suffer failed retirement. So that safe withdrawal rate stuff, let's throw that out. No. It's not safe withdrawal rate analysis that's wrong. Safe withdrawal rate analysis is wonderful. The whole reason I got so excited about John Graney's site when I first discovered it many years ago is that he focused on safe withdrawal rates, and I thought properly so. He got the numbers wrong. He didn't know that passive investing doesn't work. So his safe withdrawal rate study is rooted in the passive investing mindset methodology. But he understands one thing that John Graney and I agree on is safe withdrawal rate analysis is critical, especially for an early retiree. It's critical for any retiree. It's critical for any investor, but it's especially critical for an early retiree. He's 100% right about that. So the answer is not to throw safe withdrawal rate analysis over the cliff. The answer is to do safe withdrawal rate analysis properly. And to do it properly, you've got to factor in valuations. And that's what we do. That's what John Walter Russell and I do in the Retirement Risk Evaluator, a calculator at our two websites. We build. You see, people will say, well, Rob, you're so mean. You point out that the passive investors got it all wrong. How mean can you be? Why are you so mean? It's not mean. It's showing them respect that what I'm doing is I'm saying, look, you guys developed these wonderful tools. I don't want to see all your work go to waste. Did you develop these calculators and these studies to cause millions of busted retirements? I don't think so. So why don't we correct it? Why don't we correct the mistakes and make the safe withdrawal rate studies do what they're supposed to do? Give people accurate numbers. Give people valuable guidance. And when you do that, when you use an analytically valid methodology, that's just what they do. So I come not to bury safe withdrawal rate analysis. You know, I come to reform it. The same thing's true with passive investing because the safe withdrawal rate thing is just a microcosm of the whole passive investing question. All the safe withdrawal rate studies are smart, helpful studies about retirement ruined by a belief in passive investing. And all that passive investing is, again, I'm going to say this and then wrap up, all that passive investing is a big mistake. There were academics who were trying to understand why short-term timing didn't work, why stock prices performed in a random walk, and they didn't know the reason. And they took a guess, and the guess was wrong. And Shiller proved that that guess was wrong in 1981, but there had already been millions of dollars spent promoting the passive investing model, and the idea was, let's just fake it. And we've been faking it ever since. And we've got these powerful ideas out there that would allow us all to achieve financial freedom many years sooner. But to get there, we've got to figure out a way to say the three magic words, I and was and wrong. And when we do that, we turn the key. We get into the dragon's lair. The dragon's sleeping, and we grab his gold and we run. On the other hand, William Bernstein, on the other hand, when you examine an entire market consisting of hundreds of or thousands of companies, these unexpected events average out. For this reason, the income stream of the market as a whole is a much more reliable calculation. The ability to estimate the long-term future returns of the major asset classes is perhaps the most important investment skill that an individual can possess. Truer words have never been spoken. More valuable words on investing have never been spoken. Indexing made it possible. We wouldn't be where we are today without indexing. Passive investing is the thing holding us back. So says Rob Bennett. Good luck with your investing strategies.